Welcome to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James, he, him. I'm a queer political activist, actor, comedian, self-proclaimed sexy blurred. That's a black nerd. And each week, I'm joined in the corner by other fabulous minorities and some allies tackling the news, pop culture, politics, media, entertainment, and history with a little self-care, self-love sprinkled throughout, all for our own personal and collective empowerment. On this week's Minority Corner Rewind, inspired by last week's conversation around curfews, which were a result of quote-unquote riots, but listen, we all know that riots are just the language of the unheard. And when you put armed oppressing boots and agents against this unheard community, how can you not expect for things to explode? Well, on this week's Rewind, I thought it would be great to actually revisit some of those riots in greater detail. So we covered just how many riots there actually were from 1964 to 1971. If you haven't already listened to this corner, or maybe you forgot, I know I did, it was a lot. And we specifically focus on a few riots. We look at the Harlem riots of 1964, the Watts riots of 1965, the Newark riots, and the Detroit riots of 1967. And this was all inspired after me having seen Kathryn Bigelow's Detroit and how this movie is not FUBU, which is essentially for us, by us, and who this movie really is for. And we also talk about why it's important to have folks of the community and culture working on a project that is specifically about them. And we dive into what really happened during the Detroit riots, which would have made for a much better movie, and why you can skip Bigelow's movie. Sorry, KB, they can't all be winners. Plus, we've got our fact check from last week's episode at the very end of this episode, which I think is our new format. Plus, your tweet and quote of the week honoring Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Wow. So much to do on this Minority Corner Rewind. Let's get into it. Time to learn, laugh, and play right here on Minority Corner. Let's go.
For us, by us, for us, by us, FUBU.
So to break that down, it's like, I feel like we're just continuing right off of this other conversation. It's segueing so well.
Yeah.
So I saw a little movie called Detroit, directed by
I haven't seen it.
And, you know, I remember seeing the trailer and I was so excited that this movie was being made.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of petered out from theaters and no one said anything. Because it had, to me, Oscar bait all over it. And I was like,
it did.
I am so glad someone is telling the story. And then it just disappeared. And I was like, what happened?
It did look tense.
Yeah. And boy, was it. So the reason why I call into question, though, is Detroit FUBU. Yeah. For those of you all who don't know what FUBU means, what does FUBU mean, Naneke?
For us, by us,
exactly.
Damon Dash.
So what I mean is
creating that brand, Shark Tank.
He's also got a new podcast out. It's pretty dope.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so is Detroit, especially on the heels of something like, you know, I keep calling it Wakanda.
Yeah.
Black Panther. Which was FUBU. It was for us, by us. You know, it was very...
Yeah, I mean, literally all black people call it Wakanda.
Yeah, I mean, that's just what we call it. You mean Wakanda? And that's going to be the moment. Where were you when Wakanda hit the scenes, when we discovered Wakanda?
I was in Oakland. Epicenter in Oakland.
So I was super jazzed, not jazzed, but really interested in this movie because it was talking about the riots and just doing a little backstory about...
Yeah, educate
let's
me.
Let's talk about the 60s, where the movie is set. Let's set the scene. Now,
Motown, I'm dancing, got my beehive and my afro.
And watch out, girl, there's a Molotov cocktail because
it
doesn't matter what city you were probably in. From 1964 to 1971, there were how many riots would you guess were in that time period?
Oh my God. A lot.
Just a ballpark number. Just say a number.
150. 750. What?
There were 750 riots from 1964 to 1971. 228 people were killed.
And
oh my God,
12,741 were injured, and there were more than 15,000 separate incidents of arson, especially mainly in Black urban neighborhoods. So I am like, but what? I did not realize there was that many riots.
Volatile.
It was pretty much in every. And what's interesting is that most of them were not actually. A majority of them were in actually northern states. There were some in the south, but it was mostly in northern urban areas because you got to think. Like even
that's where the conflict was happening.
That's where the conflict was happening. And I feel like we kind of don't really look at those states. We're always like, ooh, the South. Mm-hmm. This shit has been in turmoil all over. Racism is like white people have not liked Black people and had rules against them all over the United States.
It's weaved into the foundation of our country.
Yes. Usually what would happen is a minority person would be killed or injured. And the Black folks were like, we've had enough because they've had since the abolition
this
of slavery.
This sounds very familiar.
Yeah. And since the abolition of slavery, like they were having to deal with a lot of conflicts and a lot of stuff. Just real quickly, some of the main riots that you may have heard of. There was the Harlem riots in 1964. Started on July 16th when a police officer killed a young Black boy in Harlem. The violence ended on July 23rd. So that went for a long time. We're talking like almost a week of rioting, you know?
That's crazy. And how do you just go to work?
You don't. Like the city is shut down. You don't.
Jeez.
Like,
and that's why, that's like, true. You're locked in your house.
Cities were on fire. And, you know, and only one fatality in that one, but there were 144 injuries and 519 arrests. There's the Watts riots, which we've talked about on the show before.
LA.
Yeah, in LA. That's where they were chanting burn, baby, burn as, you know, the city was going down. And it took about 13,000 guardsmen to bring the rioting under control. So they sent in the troops into this, which is also very alarming to me. Like, that's such a...
These are people!
Your people, you know?
Right! Civilians of this country!
34 deaths in that one, 1,000 injured, about 600 buildings damaged.
Oh my God.
Got the New York riots in New Jersey. There was a lot of riots that happened in New Jersey. And also, as we're talking about these different cities, kind of think about it. Just think about the landscape and the people there and what's still going on there in those cities.
Right, exactly.
You know?
And that's a good point.
The Newark riots happened in 1967. Police beat a Black cab driver while trying to arrest him, as you do, I guess, right?
Jeez.
National Guard was called in to help restore order. 23 people were killed in that one, and nearly like $11 million in damage was caused. And so these are the three riots that Kathryn Bigelow references leading up to the movie. Detroit, which is so interesting because, like, again, that's why you have to do your own research, because I was like, oh, there were four riots that happened in the 60s. No, there were 750. There was even riots in Portland, in Portland, Oregon.
We talked about Oregon and what it was founded
like
on.
The 20 Black people, like, in Portland rioting. Godspeed to y'all. Like, woof.
I mean, this is clearly, I mean, obviously everybody talks about the 60s. It was not peace and love in the 60s.
No.
There was a group of people, Black people, that were trying desperately to fight for their rights. This is indicative of how sick the country was and is, that we still have to bust out in order to get some attention to the crisis that we're going through.
The 60s were terrifying. And a lot of these were in like mainly big cities, you know, that are left now devastated after it. And some of them never recovered. Like, to me, I'm like this is, I understand Detroit now. I absolutely understand Detroit. So in Detroit, the riots, it lasted for about 5 days. There were 33 Blacks and 10 whites that were killed.
33?
Yeah, 1,100.
That's a deadly ass riot.
1,189 were injured. 7,200 people were arrested. About 2,500 stores were looted. Total property damage was estimated around $32 million. So until the riots following the death of Martin Luther King in 1968, the next year, the Detroit riots were pretty much the largest uprising of the 1960s. So this was like the largest one.
Wow.
So then we get to Kathryn Bigelow. And I was actually really excited about this because I was like, here it is, this Oscar. Oscar nominated.
Yes.
She won.
Yes. So you have, she won for Hurt Locker.
Hurt Locker. So you have this, you know, Oscar winning white lady who's telling this story. I always like, ooh, when a white person's telling a story that's not just about white people, I'm like, this is okay, yay.
It's a little like, yikes. I mean, I do have to give her credit. Well, no, I love that. Wait, she's one of the only women that have won Best Director.
I don't.
It's not her story to tell.
But actually, here's the thing. I'm sorry, that came out wrong, or maybe misunderstood. I was like, yay. I'm excited. Like, I love it when people are, because they have access, they have more access than we do. And they're just recycling all their sort of white stories. But yes, it does need to come from an informed space. So I was actually really like, yay, this is great. This is what she's choosing to, I was really excited about this.
Got it. Yes.
And, but the main sort of thing, and you'll read a lot of the reviews, mainly, is that there's not a sense of a Black community or activism in this film. And I...
Oh, interesting.
You don't really get that sense. And it's very jarring. I would say, like, why I don't think it's Forrest Bias, because, you know, when Ava did in Salem, and when she did Selma, and there was the bombing of the...
Not Salem. The witch trials.
Catherine Bigelow maybe should have directed that instead. Selma. Those are two very different.
Yes.
Two horrific moments in time.
Yes.
But, you know, there's the bombing of the church with the four girls. It's horrific, but yet, like, I didn't feel it was. It felt, again, Forrest Bias. Yes. And, like, whereas this was just hard to watch. And I don't think that if a Black person was directing it, would have been done in the same sort of way, or there would have been a heart and a soul to it. Because,
interesting.
For example, like, you pretty much just start on the day of the riots. But, you know, 4 years earlier, before the riots, on June 23rd, 1963, nearly 200,000 Black people had marched through the city of Detroit, highlighting inequality in the city that Black people were no longer willing to tolerate their businesses. As usual, you know.
Why don't we start with that? Give it some subtext.
And the reason why they were marching is that Cynthia Scott had been shot once in her stomach and twice in the back by an officer who was not indicted. Sound familiar?
And very familiar.
So it's Detroit has this level of activism that literally the opening of the film is and the opening of the film is the police go in and they raid this underground party where there's a bunch of Black people, like, you know, drinking and having a good time, right? So that's the opening scene. But
no context?
What was omitted from that is that Black businesses, because many Detroit entertainment venues and restaurants during this time, they barred Black people and Black businesses, and Black businesses owners had difficulty getting capital to acquire permits or to be able to open up their own bar to be able to legally have an establishment.
So they had to have house parties.
And so, yeah, I think it was a house party, or it was some sort of building where they did not have the right to be. They just legally didn't have the rights to be there, but they were celebrating two Black men from the neighborhood who had come home from Vietnam. And so that was the celebration. And you do see the two men from Vietnam there, but again, there's no context to, like, what's happening. There's just a police raid at this place. And then they're getting carted off in these paddy wagons one by one. And then people are starting to gather and they're like, what the fuck is this? And they're, you know, a bottle gets thrown eventually. But what is happening?
Oh, so that movie's saying that that's the start?
Yes. And that is one of the, but it is one of the starting. It is what then for 5 days later, there was riots after that moment. But what they're admitting, what they're not showing is that. What happened is those people refused to go home. They weren't just being arrested and being carted off. They were like, fuck this, we're not going home. And that's when they rallied up the paddy wagons. But there's no dialogue or anything like that to be able to... And there's other dialogue that's happening that... Like, why is that the dialogue that I'm listening to? So
there's no subtext. There's no background knowledge of what was bubbling up to the surface, which you just did in 3 minutes.
Right. Well, after doing some research, and I mean, Catherine, like, if you're doing a movie, do the research, you know?
Research is your friend, you guys.
And then immediately the film just starts to cut to looting and mayhem.
Oh my God.
And so you got, you know, Black kids selling bicycles. And, like, I will tell you this, though, it's terrifying. I was actually in a very bad mood for the next few days after I saw the movie.
No, that's not good.
The images, and I don't think that Kathryn Bigelow was trying to be malicious in what she was trying to do, but it was very triggering and jarring for myself as an African American, as someone who's had the police damn near fucking raid in my apartment twice, you know. It was very triggering and very jarring for myself. And just to see the images of the way that the Black people were being treated, which I think was very accurate, I just wonder if it was was a black director, how it would have been handled. I just wonder. And I can't help but wonder, you know?
Yeah. I completely agree. I feel like there needs... This is one of the reasons, like, we don't... I'm not... If you want to tell a story that is not your story, but you want to shed some light on a community that isn't normally there, like, for instance, if I'm going to write a movie about Asian American women, I'm not going to just write it myself. Yeah. I'm going to surround myself with Asian American women from different walks of life to give me insight mm-hmm. into a community and feelings that I don't know.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're tapping into a deficit by watching this
yeah.
and seeing that there's a hole.
Yeah. And so there is scenes too where they're in this police station, and the police station is just so crowded with so many black bodies that they're just arresting people left and right. And again, not really yeah. given any context, because all I've seen is these black people looting. So I'm assuming that, oh, I guess they're looting or they're out, you know, past curfew, which, okay. But like, you know, yeah. apparently there was like most of the people, like, let me see. There were 3,200 looting cases, but 60% had resulted in a dismissal and only 2 had resulted in convictions. Like, they were just really rounding up these what? People. And there were some black police officers, but they were mostly white, and they had been known to just be... have terrible relations the way that they were dealing with black folks, that there was a lot of racism right. in the in the Detroit PD. So
black cops have implicit bias too.
Sure, absolutely, which we'll get to, which was actually going to play out in the movie as well, and actually what the true story is based on. So Mary Phillips of the Huffington Post, when the movie came out, she called it the most irresponsible and dangerous movie of the year.
Oh, shit.
So the movie really probably should have been called The Algiers Motel Incident, because about 40 minutes of the movie take place. And what you've seen in the trailer is the scenes that are happening at the Algiers Motel. And it's very tense, which, I mean, this is a real moment that happened. And even Catherine Bigelow did say that, like, the movie was only called Detroit. It wasn't originally called Detroit, but it got called Detroit for marketing purposes. So they were literally trying to capitalize on this thing that happened, which it sucks because now that movie, the movie can't live up to what was going on in Detroit, because it wasn't ever intended to be. There are the real life. So it's very interesting, because it's all, when you're in outside the Algiers, the hotel, these are all real people, like real, based on real characters and real people.
Oh, cool. I mean, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. And again, but it's also like, and so one of the guys who's in it is Roderick Davis. He was one of the original members of the Dramatics. And so part of the storyline is almost kind of Dreamgirls, because you're at the big theater and then he's about to perform. And then they're like, you got to get out of here. It's a riot. He's like, but I want to perform. And so then him and his friend, manager guy, go to the Algiers Motel because they want to avoid the riots. They're like, we don't want to participate in the riots.
Got it.
We're trying to chillax and, you know, hang out. And so most of the movie takes place at the Algiers Hotel, which ends up happening is that these three white police officers and a black security guard played by John Boyega essentially play a scare tactic game, which ends up killing, they murder and like... three black teenagers there through these scare tactics.
And that's a true story.
This is based on a true story. So, and there's some of the problems with this is that the way that it's done, it's you're watching like a 40-minute execution of three black teenagers. Another thing too is in the casting, I did not realize that they were supposed to be teenagers, especially three of the guys who are killed.
How old are they? Do they look?
One of the guys looks like he's like, you know, late 20s, early 30s. He's supposed to be a teenager. And so it's like,
okay, guys, let's cast some teenagers.
Yeah.
Like,
some of the other.
That's another.
Yeah.
That's a thing for black people. They age us up constantly. They think that we're more mature than what we are. That's why you use the hashtag black boy joy all the time. We have to, we age our kids up way too fast.
Yeah. And there's also this moment where what brings the police into there is that one of the teens was shooting a starter pistol at the military, because the military has raided Detroit at this point. They're there. And he shoots a starter pistol. Now, they never found the starter pistol. So by saying that he had shot the starter pistol, again, no one can be killed by a starter pistol, but by saying that is you're saying that, oh, that's part of the fact and that's what actually happened. And there was no factual evidence that that was the thing. So it's just, and also, like, you know, some of the scenes are so hard to watch, but yet they didn't go far enough. It's just this really weird sort of area that I think in the hands of a black director, it would have been handled differently. They did have one of the Julie Delaney. There were two white girls who were also there, who were also there, and they ended up, you know, escaping or getting out.
Yeah, of course.
But Julie Delaney, she was actually there on set, kind of helping to sort of coach things along based on
the real person.
Yeah, but I'm also wondering, as like, I think Roderick Davis is still alive. I don't know. He ended up leaving.
Why wasn't he there?
He ended up leaving the dramatics. He was like scarred from the events of the travesty that
happened. Oh, wow.
So there is a scene. There's a character, a young girl, 4 years old, Tanya Blanding, who was killed by, in real life, a National Guard. There was this threat that they thought that
a 4-year-old?
Yes, because they thought that she was a sniper. So there was this rumor.
They thought a 4-year-old was a sniper.
She had a light or something. So there was
she's a 4-year-old.
Yeah. So that is an actual thing that does take place in the film that they did actually show. Which not like the whole entire movie was bullshit. You know,
right?
But like it does show. Like, I mean, oh my god, the National Guard. Like, these are people who are warriors. So they think that they're in a fucking war zone. And there was quote unquote. Right. Threats that there were snipers, and they never end up fighting any of these sort of quote unquote snipers.
That's a cover up, probably.
Yeah, to give excuse to be, doing the shooting that they're doing. Historian Danielle McGuire said about 155,000 rounds of ammunition were shot by the National Guard in 5 days.
That's insane. That's insane. You know, right now, the way that you're telling the story, I would much rather watch a documentary on the Detroit riots and the Algiers Hotel.
Yeah.
I will have to say, really quickly, I didn't want to put all the blame on Kathryn Bigelow.
Also the writer.
One, the writer, I looked up the screenplay writer.
Yeah.
Mark Bowell, and he's a white guy. So
yeah. So oh yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. I wanted to throw him into the fire, into the arena as well. Because you're right. Not just her. It is also the writing team. Which also, it's like, I hope that there's like production designers who are black. I hope that there's
Like, where are the black people involved in the background of this movie? Not background, but
yes. And you're right. In the creation of it. Absolutely.
I'm looking right now, and it's like people also searched for, and it's just like a list of
white people.
Mm-hmm.
And like, again, like you said, it's not that these people can't tell the story, but you're going to want to surround yourself with people who are going to help give it some basis and some.
Yes.
Otherwise you're just, Abercrombie and Fitching it with, King of the Jungle sweaters all over again.
Yes.
And you can help.
I mean, don't trust your own ego in telling someone else's story.
Yeah. Two other points I wanted to bring up that would have been really great fodder for this movie. George Edwards, he was a liberal who stepped down from the Michigan Supreme Court in the mid-1960s. He had charged, he was like, the department is fucking racist. The police department is racist. Like there was so many other things that were going on. And also the cops, the three white cops, are kind of viewed in the movie as just bad apples.
I'm sick of that. I'm sick of that defense.
And so almost to the effect of like, there's other, their police chief, he tried to reprimand them for being racist, but that there's a cop at the end who helps the guy from the dramatics, he helps him escape in the very end. And so it paints this, and I get that what you're trying to say, it just, and this movie's coming out at such a time where it's so relevant. The things that are happening in Detroit, you're like, this
parallels.
Could be, you're like, this could be Ferguson, or these are the same things that are still happening. And that bad apple, and they're very villainous and sick and twisted, almost cartoonish in a sense, not fully cartoonish, but they're so vilified. Yeah. And it kind of just makes it seem like they're just an anomaly and the rest of the cops are just trying to do their job. When the case, there's history that shows that like those cops are fucking racist as fuck.
Yeah. It's all about understanding. It's because everybody wants to put the blame on somebody else. It's scapegoating. Yeah. When it's the only way that we can really try and fix this is understanding that it is insidious in all of us. We all have it, especially if you're benefiting from privilege. If you're a police officer, no matter how nice you are when you take your clothing off, when you are with your family, you may feel like you don't have a racist bone in your body, but once you put that uniform on and you're patrolling in an area and you have your lizard flight or fight mind kicks in, then you start basing down into what is woven into the fabric of our country, which is racism.
Yeah.
So it's it's more complicated mm-hmm. to say that it's in with it, it's within all of us. And clearly what you're saying with this movie is they dumbed that shit down.
Yeah,
they dumbed it down.
Yeah. And I feel, and I here's the thing. I think that this movie is, I think it's for white people, made by white people. I think white people should absolutely see this movie because it is going to show you, you'll see the parallels to what's happening today. And for you, that will be helpful. And you'll get to see the images that are, it's very jarring. I think that white people should absolutely see this movie, or non-black people should absolutely see this movie. And I think, again, it was made for white people by white people. And I think Kathryn Bigelow is trying to draw the parallels. And I think they're both trying, and the writer guy, Boal, are trying to draw those parallels. I just don't think that black people need to see those parallels told in that way. We get it.
Yeah.
And we get it in a deeper sense, in a more cultural sense. Because the People's Tribunal, as the writer of the Huffington Post brought up, there was a People's Tribunal that happened right after the massacre that happened. And Rosa Parks, essentially a bunch of black people got together and they held their own trial they held their own trial essentially of charging these and just trying to get all the facts together. And and so they held their own trial. It was in a church. Rosa Parks was part of the tribunal.
John
O'Killens, black bookstore owner Edward Vaughn, who he owned one of the only black bookstores in Detroit, which ended up getting bombed by police and burnt down by police.
What the fuck?
Yeah. And so they found obviously the police officers guilty, and this led to the actual trial, like the trial actually happening. So that would have been a really beautiful moment to also actually happen.
That would have been cool.
The film. And so like again, you'll see all the violence that happens to all the black bodies in the writing. It is a fucking war zone. Kathryn Bigelow does paint a war zone, and you're like, oh my
god, she's good at war.
The 60s,
she's good at war movies,
and it shows like that's what it was like. Like the 60s were fucking terrible. These people were living in a war zone.
They had curfews. Yes.
It was absolutely terrifying. But those scenes, they don't have any connection to them because we don't get to know those people, those struggles, those journeys. I mean, that would have been a beautiful story to have told as well. And last thing I just wanted to close on is that it made me just realize why black communities and neighborhoods still to this day are met with such, why we're still struggling. Because
this wasn't long ago.
The riots that had happened, there was like, from the 1940s to the 1970s, the property values of black homes barely went up between those time periods. And they've gone up maybe like 4 or 5% on an average. And so like no wonder Detroit is still like where it is, because after it's like it's so,
because what happened,
and it's not so quick to point. People want to know, why are they destroying their neighborhoods? This is how fed up people were. That they were like burning it all the fuck down because it's all bullshit. And when you tell a story without that context, you're not telling the full story. And I would love to see Ava DuVernay take over the Urban Riots film, or Barry Jenkins, or Ryan Coogler, or Tyler Perry. I don't know. Lee Daniels. How about Lee?
But still, he'd probably get the nuance.
He'd get it. I just would love
some of it. Maybe, I don't know.
750 riots, and this is just a tip of the iceberg, right? So there's so many more other stories out there to be told that's a part of our history that I did not know, and I think probably many of you did not know.
Amen to that. Like, give us a chance to tell our own stories, but also thank you for shedding light on the stories, those of you that aren't a part of the community, but make sure to surround yourself with people who are a part of that community to share that story.
I would say it's a swing and a miss. I think that's two outs for white directors, right? Alex Garland from the first inning, and Kathryn Bigelow. That's two outs for white people. Good luck. Go get them next time.
Good luck. Well, thanks, James. That was really good. Always illuminating. I didn't want to see this, and now I feel very much stronger that I don't need to see this. And hopefully, I'm praying that Kathryn Bigelow will pull herself up by the bootstraps, surround herself by good people with good stories to tell, and win another Oscar deservedly with the right story, with the right voices.
And if there are any documentaries that you all know of, I had a difficult time finding ones, but I would love to I want to soak up so much information about our history. So tweet at us, let us know in the Corner Kids Facebook group.
Yeah.
Fight for the things that you care about, but do it in a way that will lead others to join you. That is a quote from Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Rest in power. It is just sort of a running theme here on 2020 of a changing of the guard, a passing of the torch, another legend gone. But we love her so much. And it just, again, we've been saying this for months and looking at Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who was, you know, holding on and fighting for so long and got us this close to the election. And this election couldn't be that. I mean, we already knew how important it was, and it has just been kicked up several notches. So Ruth got us this far. We have to do the rest of the work. If you are freaking out, it just means that there are actions for you to take. Channel that anxiety into action. There is text banking, there is phone banking. You can be writing letters, donating, social distance canvassing, adopting a state, a Senate race. The Senate races will be confirming the next justice. So there's so much more than just tweeting and getting in fights on social media or watching the news and pulling your hair out. You have so much more power. As Ben Randall said months ago on this show, do it for Ruth. So the alarms have been ringing, and I know y'all are getting into the trenches. Okay, a couple of fact checks. So fact checking from last week's episode 263, I had said something, I think I rattled off a fact of like, oh, Disney owns like 30% of the movies that come out. Well, I was a little wrong, because actually this is from CNBC, and they said Disney produced films accounted for about 33% of the total U.S. film market in regards to 2019, including 20th Century Fox, which Disney acquired earlier in 2019, and the company as a whole now represents about 38% of the market. So that's actually 40%, y'all. And Disney's closest competitor, Warner Brothers, who account for about 13.8%. Holy fucks. Disney only almost owns 50% of movies that are produced. That's a little creepy. I think anytime any one company is helping to, especially we know how important Hollywood is, it helps, changes, it affects the way that we think and see each other and other people. So, I mean, and I love Marvel and Fox and Star Wars and all that, but, you know, we gotta keep the side eye ready. I had just how many towns were in Illinois. We had mentioned last week that there were 456 sundown towns in Illinois. Well, currently today, there are about 1,299 towns. So just doing some quick math, that's almost like, what is that, a third or a fourth? Almost a good percentage of towns were sundown towns in Illinois. Wild. I had, y'all know it, I have, there was no love lost between me and the late President Ronald Reagan, and I had rattled off something about, because the Watts riots we had mentioned, and they had created a curfew after the Watts riots, which happened in 1965. So the Watts riots that happened in 1965, I had said, of course, and the curfews happened underneath probably Ronald Reagan's watch. That is not true. Ronald Reagan did not become governor of California until 1967 to 1971, giving him plenty of time to make the Black Panthers' lives a living hell. But he did not have any involvement, to my knowledge, with the Watts riots. But I'm sure he probably ran on a campaign of fear, helping him to get elected in 1967 after Watts happening in 1965. Sound familiar? Also, continuous side eye for Bo Derek from last week when she had made a reference that she was honoring her Queen Nefertiti. Girl, Queen Nefertiti was from Africa. So you're still taking Black traditions no matter where you look at it, Bo Derek. Done with you. All right, let's take a look at this week's tweet of the week. Okay, there's two I want to kind of acknowledge. This comes from at AJST1987. I just thought this was really cute. They tweeted me when the drums hit the intro music of At Minority Corner, and it's this cute little Black girl just doing a little like shimmy shake of the shoulder, looking all boss. I love it. Good. I'm glad that y'all are feeling the drums of our intro music. And this one actually is, I'm going to jump in. There was a conversation happening between this Minority Corner listener at Willow on T-She, Megan Star, was commenting on something a fellow Max Fun podcaster at Justin McElroy was talking about, you know, again, why we have to get Joe Biden elected. And they commented, this wasn't a direct tweet to us, but we were included in the tweet. So I'm just going to jump in on this. And I loved this tweet. They wrote, yes, I was persuaded to actually get pretty enthused about Biden-Harris ticket after an episode of Minority Corner. People need to look at the actual platform and not just the past, especially Harris's Senate career. You can't get informed only with memes and Twitter, y'all. Boom. Mic drop. Everyone go home. Twitter shut down. We can call it a day. That was beautifully said. That was absolutely beautifully said. Yes, you can't just get your news from little, you know, memes and tweets and Russian disinformation. Y'all need to do the research of your own. And there is clearly only one choice to get us from driving off the cliff into hell. That's where it's headed. So really appreciated that. And anyways, you are so right. Taking action. And remember, life is not social media, y'all. It is. Watch that documentary, The Social Dilemma. We gotta reel it back, folks. All right, that is the show. Aneke is going to be back with us on this Friday's episode, so that should be fun. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Join the Minority Corner Kids Playground on Facebook. You can send us an email. Oh, in preparation for next week's episode, we're going to have my friend, an extraordinary grassroots organizer, friend of the podcast, Amanda Wilkerson, is going to be here next week. And to help us figure out how do we get involved this election season. So if you have questions and you're not sure what to do, or maybe you have fears or concerns or need some tips, email us at minoritycorner@gmail.com. Email us your questions so that we can ask Amanda. Listen, she's been in the business for so long. I met her working for the DNC in 2008. We're both assistant campaign directors, and Amanda's gone on to work on for so many campaigns and organizations. She knows her shit. So if you have questions, what to do, how to do it, where to get involved, send them in to email us at minoritycorner@gmail.com. You can send us an email, or you can email us a little audio soundbite. Love to get your voice here on the podcast. Yes, we want to hear from you. And a big thank you, as always, to our amazing editor, Sarah Brown. Love you so much. And we have a new member on the Minority Corner team. Sam Jackson has joined the team as our production assistant coordinator, just helping to... there's so many things behind the scenes that need help with, and she is helping in so many different ways. So thankful to both of these two joining the team. And a thank you to all of you listeners, and specifically our Maximum Fun members, because you are helping us to grow our team and do what we do. So a big thank you to you all. We love you so much. Looking forward to being back here with you on Friday. Be safe, be well, and thank you so much for listening to Minority Corner, because together we're the majority. Love y'all.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.